From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The UN Security Council has taken up the latest North Korean missile test of what is believed to be a new intercontinental ballistic missile. Jeffrey Feltman is the UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Mr. President, this is the 13th time the Council has met to discuss the DPRK in 2017. The DPRK's repeated nuclear and missile tests over the past 2 years have created great tension on the Korean Peninsula and beyond. This dynamic must be reversed.
U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley warned the Council the North would be utterly destroyed if war should break out.
The dictator of North Korea made a choice yesterday that brings the world closer to war, not farther from it. We have never sought war with North Korea, and still today, we do not seek it. If war does come, it will be because of continued acts of aggression like we witnessed yesterday.
She called on all nations to cut ties with Pyongyang. President Donald Trump spoke by phone with his Chinese counterpart. The U.S. has called on Beijing to cut off the North's oil supply. U.S. spokesperson Heather Nauert said new sanctions in the U.S. campaign of maximum pressure are also under discussion.
Some of this information is just being pulled together at this time, but it would essentially include the right to interdict transporting goods to and from North Korea. That could be a major new pressure point that could help in this overall campaign.
She also indicated an international meeting will be held in Canada to discuss better ideas in dealing with the North Korean threat. The issue of slavery was front and center at the opening Wednesday of the 5th European Union-African Union Summit in Abidjan.
Les récentes images atroces de migrants.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said recent video images of migrants sold in Libya remind us to act quickly. Summit host Ivorian President Ouattara called on all urgent measures to end slave trading. This is VOA News. The UN Refugee Agency Wednesday welcomed the decision taken by Libya to open a transit center for unaccompanied children and other migrants following reports that slave traders were selling them at markets in the North African country. It will allow the transfer of thousands of refugees to third countries. The Vatican said the moral authority of Pope Francis remains intact. Despite criticism from rights groups, he was not more forceful publicly in announcing the Myanmar government's crackdown on Rohingya Muslims. Greg Burke is a Vatican spokesman.
I find it really hard to think that the moral authority of the Pope is somehow diminished. People are not expected to solve impossible problems, and the moral authority of the Pope stands.
Burke said the Pope's lack of public condemnation does not take away from past statements he's made or what might have been said in private discussions with officials of Myanmar, also known as Burma. Francis ends his four-day visit Thursday and travels then to Bangladesh, where he's expected to meet with some of the more than 600,000 Rohingya Muslims who fled Myanmar. Rival Palestinian factions Wednesday agreed to postpone the handover of control of Gaza from Hamas to Fatah by 10 days to December 10. Fatah official Fayez Abu Aita said the delay in the Egyptian-mediated agreement will allow for what he called a completion of arrangements. Both sides signed a reconciliation agreement in October in Cairo after Hamas agreed to hand over Gaza's administrative control to Fatah a decade after winning control. Disagreements over the fate of thousands of public employees has been among the issues raising tensions. A committee of OPEC, the oil-producing cartel, has recommended production cuts be carried over from April 1st to the end of 2018. The current production limit among the 24 oil-producing nations caps daily output at 1.8 million barrels. The cap was reached last year when oil bottomed out at $30 a barrel. Currently, it's trading at about $60. Flights have resumed at the international airport on the Indonesian resort island of Bali after nearly 3 days shutdown following an eruption of the nearby Mount Agung volcano. While the alert level remains at the highest, winds have shifted, blowing columns of volcanic ash away from the airport. Hundreds of flights had been canceled, affecting tens of thousands of people. A system-wide scheduling malfunction left thousands of American airline flights in December without pilots. The Allied Pilots Association said more than 15,000 flights during the peak holiday travel period in December, beginning December 17, were affected. Reserve pilots and pilots offered overtime pay were being pressed into service in a bid to avoid having to cancel flights, which could cost American Airlines millions in lost revenue. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Congo's main opposition coalition has called for a mass rally today to force President Joseph Kabila to step down from office.
People don't want Mr. Kabila to stay again in office after the 21st of December, according to the last agreement signed by political leaders.
Arbo Puela is an opposition member of parliament and the Rassemblement. Togolese opposition coalition is holding yet another protest today to demand President Faure Gnassingbé's resignation. Zimbabwe's High Court acquits a prominent pastor arrested for criticizing then-President Robert Mugabe. And a UN panel of experts says South Sudan's nearly four-year-old civil war is far from being over.
There is a broad recognition that the ARC is untenable. It's failed as it was originally intended, and so something needs to change. Exactly what that is not clear, and there is a lot of disagreement about that.
Clem Ryan is coordinator of the UN panel of experts on South Sudan. Burundi's Batwa ethnic minority says it is being discriminated against both in and outside the country. And the Senegalese linguist says French as the country's official language impedes some citizens from participating in their government. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, Felix Tshisekedi, the son of the late veteran politician Etienne Tshisekedi, has called for a mass rally today, Thursday, of supporters of the opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement to force President Joseph Kabila to step down. According to an agreement signed last December, DRC is to have elections by the end of this year, and Mr. Kabila would not run. But the Elections Commission announced this year that the elections will be held in 2018 instead. This week, the Roma Catholic bishops who brokered that agreement urged Mr. Kabila to pledge that he will not seek a third term in office. Arbo Puela is an opposition member of parliament in the Rassemblement. He says the Congolese people will turn out in large numbers today, despite warnings from the mayor of Kinshasa to stay off the streets.
You know that people don't want Mr. Kabila to stay again in office after the 21st of December, according to the last agreement signed by political leaders, which said that elections must be organized before that day. But elections didn't be organized, didn't well organized before that day. So we want to do our peaceful march because of people don't want Mr. Kabila to be maintained in power, because Mr. Nanga, the leader of Electoral Commission, is just doing what Mr. Kabila wants. We don't want him to be as a president no more. That's why Congolese people want to be in the streets tomorrow. But the governor of Kinshasa refused the people to be in the streets, and we know that the policemen, for the time being, are already outside, and they to shoot everyone who's going to march tomorrow. Whenever they find 5 or 10 people, they will shoot them or arrest them. People say that they don't want to care about that, and they will go out. We will go out.
But did you get permission from the police to have the rally?
According to our constitution, when someone or a group wants to organize a rally, they have to inform. That's what the constitution says. You have to inform the number one, the city. We informed Mr. Andre Kimbuta, the governor of Kinshasa. And he refused, saying that, no, you can't make security of people because they don't know where people will be from and what the direction we're going to take. But we said that we sent a letter according to the constitution saying that it's just information and not asking permission for that.
You mentioned the Catholic bishops. This week, the Catholic bishops urged President Kabila to pledge that he will not seek another term. Would that be okay if the president pledged that he will not seek another term? Would that satisfy you and Mr. Tshisekedi and the Rassemblement?
The problem we have is Mr. Kabila. He don't want to leave the power. The really problem we have is about him. Whenever he can say that he will no more run for president, that will be good. But what they're planning to do is to shoot so that he can organize national and provincial elections so that they can organize a referendum again so that Mr. Kabila can run again for president. And we can't accept that. He has been president for 17 years, and enough is enough.
You mentioned Mr. Nagana, the chair of CINE, the election commission, but he has promised to hold election in 2018. Why can't you all wait for 2018 to go to the election?
No, as Mr. Kabila will be there, he won't let things go on. He will make things only in his interest. Now we know that Mr. Nanga is working for Mr. Kabila. So Mr. Nanga is untrustful. And we don't want him again in the Electoral Commission because he's not fair.
Albert Puela is an opposition member of parliament and coordinator of the opposition dynamics. He was speaking with me from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition has called yet another mass protest today, Thursday, to demand President Faure Gnassingbé's resignation. This is the second of three protests planned for this week. The third is this Saturday. The parties have been demonstrating to demand a return to the country's 1992 constitution, which calls for a 2-5-year term limit for presidents. Faure Gnassingbé has been in power since the death of his father in 2005. Today's protest comes after coalition leaders have just returned from Paris, France, where they met with African Union Chairman and Guinean President Alpha Condé. Kodjo de Lavia is Secretary General of Togo's main opposition National Alliance for Change Party.
Today we will go on with another rally, and we expect will be more crowded than today, and we will still go on Saturday where we expect more people, because you see some people are at their business during the week and are free on the Saturday. Last Saturday we have a huge crowd, and I guess this coming Saturday we will also have a huge crowd to attend the rally. Today, our principal leaders report on their mission in Paris. Tomorrow, they will go on talking about the different meeting with head of state and high-ranking personalities in the sub-regions.
You say your leaders were in Paris. You're talking about Jean-Pierre Fabre, and what was the purpose of going to Paris?
Yes, Jean-Pierre Fabre and Brigitte Ajamago-Johnson and Mr. Tiki Achabam. They went to Paris and they met with President Alpha Condé, which is the head of state of Guinea-Conakry, and also the current president of the African Union. They discuss with him, and they hand up memorandum on the political situation in Togo, and focus mainly on what they call mesures d'apaisement. That is different measures that should be taken to facilitate political discussion between the regime and the opposition political parties.
I read an article this week quoting Mr. Gilchrist Olympio. I know one time Gilchrist Olympio used to be a member of the opposition, but then he joined the Faure Gnassingbé government. But the article said that he called on President Gnassingbé not to seek re-election in 2020. So I thought that was kind of strange. Is he back with the opposition?
You see, Mr. Olympio put himself in a sort of embarrassing position because he joined the government, but he say is in the opposition. Okay, but now, yesterday, Mr. Olympio made a statement because he realized his agreement didn't work at all. His agreement was a failure. And now he joined what people are claiming for, that is going back to the 1992 constitution and put an end to this current mandate of the head of state.
Kodjo de Lavia, Secretary General of Togo's main opposition National Alliance for Change Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Thursday, November 30th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. The UN panel of experts on South Sudan has released a new report on the situation in the country. As we hear from IMBO, the report shares some insight into what's expected from the high-level right revitalization forum, which is clouded by skepticism and anxiety.
There are just a couple of weeks left until South Sudan's conflict reaches its fourth anniversary. Even with the grim December 13th milestone, experts worry that the fighting that has overwhelmed the country is not near its end.
And so what we are seeing is merely further recourse to violence. And that's why in the report we're very clear that we anticipate more fighting during the dry season this year. And the humanitarians, of course, are also saying that food insecurity will become far more acute again in early 2018. So there is very little end in sight just at the moment. When I was in New York last week discussing this with the Security Council, and there is deep frustration and a degree of bewilderment about just how long can this go on. And we don't have a clear answer to that, but it doesn't appear to us to be ending soon.
That's Clem Ryan, the coordinator for the UN panel of experts on South Sudan. He says amid the ongoing fighting is what he calls a deep disagreement among parties on the upcoming high-level revitalization forum, which has been described as the last chance to salvage the 2015 peace agreement. Ryan says there is wide agreement that the peace deal, which is known by its acronym ARCSS or ARCIS, is not working. He says the warring parties are not on the same page when it comes to possible solutions and the role of the high-level revitalization forum.
There is a broad recognition that the ARCSS is untenable. It's failed as it was originally intended, and so something needs to change. Exactly what that is not clear, and there is a lot of disagreement about that. Of course, I think there are those in the government who broadly, I mean, they've been very clear about not wanting this to be a renegotiation. They fundamentally do not want the existing arrangement to be changed, whereas virtually everybody outside of the government does.
The latest UN panel of experts report on South Sudan details what it terms as ethnically targeted depopulation in the Upper Nile State by government forces. It accuses the government of intentionally using tactics to deliberately protract food insecurity in some parts of the country. While it says the government is largely responsible for systematic obstructions of food and humanitarian aid, it does not exonerate opposition groups of employing similar tactics.
It's the finding that in some instances, in some locations in South Sudan, the government is blocking aid with the intention of denying food aid to parts of the community. And obviously that's having a very significant negative impact on people in South Sudan. And there was just overwhelming frustration amongst humanitarians about this issue. So we document that in the report, with particular reference to Bagiri, which is an area near Wau.
The UN Security Council is meeting Tuesday in New York to discuss the situation in South Sudan. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
Zimbabwe's High Court has acquitted a prominent pastor who was arrested for criticizing then-President Robert Mugabe. Human rights groups say Wednesday's ruling is a clear message for the new government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare.
Announcing the not guilty verdict Wednesday, Justice Priscilla Chigumba said state lawyers had failed to prove that in July of last year, Pastor Ivan Mawarire had called for violent protests and attempted to unseat then-President Robert Mugabe. Instead, the High Court judge said the clergyman acted within his rights when he called for Zimbabweans to stay at home to push the government to address the moribund economy. Mawarire is the activist behind the hashtag This Flag movement launched in 2016 to protest the government's handling of the economy and human rights abuses. When Wednesday's verdict was announced, Mawarire punched the air before smiling. Afterward, he spoke to reporters.
To the citizens of Zimbabwe, none of us should ever be afraid to animate our own constitution. Whilst I'm elated and excited at the result, I am saddened that this is what we have to go through for freedoms and rights in our own nation. One does hope that as our country changes and begins to move forward, that things like this should never, ever be allowed to happen to the citizens of this nation.
The change he's referring to, of course, is the dramatic turn of events that resulted in President Mugabe resigning last week after 37 years in office. Mugabe's former deputy, Emmerson Mnangagwa, was sworn in as president Friday and will serve as head of state until elections are held next year. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says Wednesday's ruling puts the new government on notice. The organization is representing both Mawarire and an American woman charged this month with subversion over a tweet she allegedly posted criticizing Mugabe. Harrison Nkomo of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights was at the courthouse Wednesday.
Naturally, this should work as a guideline. In law, we call it a precedent. It should work as a guideline to police officers, to politicians, especially in this new era, on the principles of human rights and the Constitution.
Christopher Mutangadura, who represented the state in Mawarire's case, told VOA the government will not challenge the High Court's ruling. However, Mawarire's legal troubles are not over yet. He faces another charge of subversion following his arrest in September of this year after he called for more anti-government protests. The date has not been set for that trial. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Burundi's Batwa Pygmy ethnic minority says it is being discriminated against both in and outside the country. This comes after the group says it was not invited to attend the ongoing Inter-Burundi dialogue in Arusha, Tanzania. Moses Javier Rimana has the story.
Batwa, an ethnic group in Burundi who are believed to be 1% of the estimated 11 million people in the country, have voiced their concerns of being discriminated. They say that they are concerned on not being represented in the regional mediated dialogue that is being facilitated by the former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa. Emmanuel Nengo, the representative of Batwa, says that the participation of Batwa in the future of the country is vital.
To the launch of this dialogue in Entebbe by His Excellency Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, Batwa community was represented by two representatives. Unfortunately, when His Excellency Mukapa took over that process, we are no longer being invited.
The Batwa community said that being marginalized is as a result of not being represented in the 2000 Arusha Agreement, and that it was high time they voiced their concerns.
The Arusha Accord said that Hutu will be represented at 60% and the Tutsi will be represented at 40%. It is 0% for Batwa. So for us, it means that we were excluded since a long time.
The Twa ethnic group, commonly known as Bushmen, remain the most marginalized community in Burundi, though they are represented by 3 members of the parliament. The Burundi government said that it cannot currently comment on the issue since it may jeopardize the ongoing dialogue. However, Burundi National Independent Human Rights Commission Chairman Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza said that he is aware of the Twa community concerns.
Our commission is aware that the battles have been discriminated against and marginalized in our society throughout history. But we are also aware that a number of corrective measures have been taken, especially through the Arusha Agreement, including the battles representation in major national institutions.
As efforts are ongoing to put an end to the current political crisis that erupted in 2015, the regional mediated inter-Burundi dialogue that is ongoing in Arusha is expected to take 13 days, as it is considered to be the final round before the report from the dialogue is presented to the summit of the East African Community Heads of State. Moses Javier Rimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Senegal has many national languages, but French is the only official language used in the government level. A linguist at the University of Dakar, Mbake Jean, says this impedes the citizens, less than 30% of whom speak French, from participating in their government as much as they should and could. Jean spoke to Ricky Stryak about what he thinks the Senegalese government should do to change that.
What the government must do is to give officially, by decree, to each of these languages the natural places it has already occupied. So it's not difficult to do the planification, meaning to arrange the place of languages in the national scale. But the importance is, if you give officially a status to a language, so the administration can use it when talking to populations, and within the offices and within the national institution, people can use national language.
Does Wolof have no official status in Senegal?
All of the national languages have only given the status of national language, meaning if they are codified. Each language which is codified is a national language, is taken as a national language, meaning that languages which are not codified are not recognized as national language. Wolof is among them. Even if it is the most vehicular language of the country, it is simply recognized as a national language, not an official language the administration of Senegal can use.
So we are saying that if you gave it an official language status, that meant a government office could use that for communicating, yes. And right now they're supposed to only use French.
Yes, because the officials are prevented to use other languages different from French, because in the constitutional, in our constitution, the laws said the official language is French. So if a ministry is addressing someone else, he is obliged to use French, because the other languages have not the status of official language.
Which languages do you propose get official status in Senegal?
All the codified languages can have official status, depending on the level where it can be used as an official language. They are not at the same level. You take Wolof, Wolof can be used all over the country as an official language next to French. You can use it if you talk to everybody, so people, the government can use it as an official language for the at the national level. But if you take, for example, Serer is widely spoken in two regions, the region of Kaolack and Fatick. So for these two regions, Serer can be an official language, but for territorial use. Mm-hmm. So the governor of Fatick or the governor of Kaolack can address the people in Kaolack and in Fatick in Serer.
Mbake Jean is a linguist at the University of Dakar. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has vowed to bring back citizens who are stranded in Libya and other parts of the world by expanding the country's socio-economic programs. African and European leaders began high-level talks on Wednesday on migration, a key issue that has received more attention since video was disseminated showing what appeared to be West African migrants being sold at a slave auction in Libya, drawing condemnation from around the world. That's it for this Thursday, November 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Zubair El Tayeb, I am James Barton saying, have a good day.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2.